Hey, grandkids, welcome to OPA 27.
27.
Yep, we are getting there, chugging on along.
That's right.
I was a little surprised. How did it get made? We both listened to that podcast with Paul Scheer.
How did this get made?
Or how did this get made?
Yeah, sorry to step on you there, but, gotta...
Yeah, it's this, not that.
Yes.
I think
you said, how did it get made?
Oh.
Yeah, which is, it conveys the same sentiment, but it's technically not the title of the podcast.
Yeah, that is
true.
If
people are trying to type this in and look it up, on the Google, they could get confused. We don't want to confuse our listeners.
Nope, that is the last thing we want to do. it's a confusing enough world that we live in. We don't need to spread any more confusion.
Absolutely not.
Well, we can start by saying that there will be no confusion topics today.
Yeah.
We have three topics, and they all have to do with The Hobbit, really.
Yeah, I would say...
And maybe Lord of the Rings franchise altogether.
Yeah, all over.
Middle Earth, yeah.
Oh, I did have another one. I don't even think I added that to the list. But,
okay.
We'll see.
Okay, well, we did purposely wait to... I think I have seen every Hobbit movie with you. Lord of the Rings and Hobbit movie.
Well, you know what? We have not... We did go see the Lord of the Rings movies, but this is the first Hobbit movie that we've been to.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The first... The last shall be first, as they... somebody said that, right? Why does that sound
sure.
familiar?
It sounds good enough for Yoda.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, he lives in Middle Earth, right?
The last shall be first... Yeah. I think that was from Star Wars. That was my Yoda impression.
It was an excellent impression.
thank you very much. That's some added value for the listener.
Well, we did go to see the last one.
Yes.
one last journey. It's the Battle of the Five Armies,
right?
Is the subtitle.
You thought it was called The Last One.
The hashtag on Twitter was One Last Journey.
Right. I did.
That's what I was thinking of initially there.
Did you see any tweets using that hashtag?
Mine.
It's a pretty long hashtag though. I mean,
they did go a little long with it.
Yeah. It's I definitely appreciated the sentiment. And I think that really hooked me, may have been a good reason that I got hooked into seeing this one, because it was like basically going to be the last movie that they're able to do.
Unless they bust out the Silmarillion.
Well, in an unrelated article, they actually, the estate of Tolkien, the Tolkien estate, is not apparently thrilled with the movies that have come out, and they also haven't sold the film rights for the Silmarillion.
Ah.
So...
Well, that would definitely impede upon anyone's progress in that department.
Yes. So Jackson was really limited in... they only had The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings to work with, I guess.
Gotcha. Well, and that's kind of funny, because I do remember... Just when this thing initially came out, and it went from one to two movies, or was it always two movies?
I think it was always going to be two movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was always going to be two, and when they bumped it to three, everyone's like, I thought people had said that they were going to fill it in with material from the Silmarillion, but they did not do that. At all. They just added filler.
Yeah.
And that honestly could be one of the reasons why the Tolkien estate is upset with the movies themselves.
It could be.
The second one, I still remember the second Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Yes.
That one just really threw me for a loop. Because I remember being so upset that Faramir? Yeah, because that was Boromir's brother that was... He was in the front lines.
One of the rangers there. Yeah.
Right. Where they changed his character so much attitude-wise. Not so much what he did, but they kind of changed his attitude quite a bit and a lot of other aspects of that second movie. Frodo running into the Nazgul in the middle of that giant city battle that never happened.
Wait, which giant city battle? Was this in the second movie?
Yeah, right at the very end, Faramir goes back to help save, or at least help start saving, what's the capital of Gondor there?
The White City, right? Minas Tirith.
Minas Tirith.
Yeah.
I mean, and I do think he ends up doing something similar to that in the book, but Frodo's never with him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have some big meeting with almost giving the ring to one of the Nazgul, which I thought was just added for no good reason.
You know, I guess I know that you had a real connection with Faramir as a character. I think I noticed a difference in his character from the book. Like they make him much more of a threat in the movie to, you know, heighten things, I guess, a little bit, you know?
Right.
But he did, capture them really and hold them prisoner for a little while there.
Yeah. So, yeah, he wasn't completely a good... He was taking his precautions, but he was always kind of good in how he treated them, though.
He was always honorable and everything. Yeah,
he was keeping them hostage, but, you know, they pretty much had free rein.
He didn't...
You know, they had guards there all the time because they were, like, out on the front lines in the mountains there, right outside of Mordor.
Right.
So, I mean, they had to be vigilant. Like, it wasn't like, oh, they're keeping them in, and that's why the guards are up. I mean, the guards were up because they needed to be there for everyone's safety.
Yeah, that was Osgiliath, I believe, was the the name of that area.
Yes.
And that, I think, is where, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, that's where Faramir and, what's her name? Oh man, this is embarrassing. he ends up with.
I don't remember what his.
Eowyn, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They end up moving into that area after the War of the Ring is over. And I think that's also where Legolas moves to after the war.
I do believe you're correct.
Which. Kind of, in a way, brings us to The Hobbit.
we can make our way back to the movie at hand.
Since Legolas is in The Hobbit movie, which I just wanted to pipe up and say I thought that was a great great move to have him like be such a character. It really felt like it connected the movies, I think.
They certainly did connect the movies with him, because I kind of chuckled when the lady asked me who Legolas's dad was talking about, and I can't remember what the King Schmuck's name is.
Thranduil, I think is what it is. Is that the Elf King, right?
Yeah, Elf King, of Mirkwood.
The Wood Elf there, yeah.
Yeah, because that was another one where, I mean, I was fine with it. They played him like a dickhead in this movie. And he was a complete dick in the book.
Yeah, he was pretty much a dick in the book. Yeah.
So, like, if you're playing them the way they're played, that's fine. Because, you know, he just kind of captured the dwarves for pretty much no good reason.
Well, elves don't like dwarves.
Well, yeah, especially that set, because they always, in the books too, they just mentioned that the Mirkwood elves were kind of dicks in general, that Elrond was a little more friendly to everyone.
That's true.
And what's her name? Galadriel.
They were not really friendly to people.
They weren't really friendly, but they were just like, no, just don't come in the forest and we won't fuck with you.
Yeah. Well, I think that, to be fair, is kind of the Mirkwood elves. Well, although, I don't know. They probably are more, they have more dealings with the wider world, I'd say, than Galadriel, the Galathrim, I think. That's the way you would refer to them in the collective noun version. But yeah, so they pretty much stayed in their woods because she had the power of the ring to kind of create her own little special piece of heaven on Middle Earth, if you will, there for elves. And
yeah, well, and she also showed up in this movie.
That is true.
In one of those scenes that
happened off camera, shall we say, in the book, if you can say
yes.
You know, something happens off camera in the book, if that makes sense to everybody out there.
Yeah, it was always implied that something of that nature had taken place.
Yeah. I mean, somewhere it was mentioned in a paragraph, probably, where they said, like, I have a feeling it actually happened in The Lord of the Rings when, at the Council of Elrond, when, all right, so this is going to get it a little bit nerdy here, in case you can't tell.
News flash 15 minutes in. It's going to get a little geeky up in this joint.
So at the Council of Elrond, Gandalf is explaining kind of a little backstory about what he's been up to. And one of the things he goes over is the necromancer at Gol-Dador. Dol Guldur?
Yes, I believe you've got that correct also.
Sure. It's spelled like it sounds.
and if we're slightly off, okay, we're not that nerdy.
Yeah, we could have looked the stuff up a little bit, but I think I'm you know, 80% sure. Dol Guldur, we'll say, where the necromancer, quote unquote, is based. At some point during that council, Gandalf says that he and you know, Galadriel. I don't know if he said Elrond for sure, but anyway, they all kind of, yeah, they might, yeah, it must have been, and I'm sure Saruman would have been there as well.
Yeah, because
I think they just talk about the White Council, really, which is all of those people, basically.
Right, and you always forget in some way, just because she isn't really even in Lord of the Rings all that much, how much of a badass she is.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the Silmarillion, she's one of the characters that appears in both places, I guess. So she's been around for quite a while.
Yeah, because I was thinking that she was one of the original race of elves, wasn't she?
Well, she came from the Blessed Realm across the sea. So she has seen the light of the two trees with her own eyes. And they say that always gives them an inner glow for those who have seen the light of the two trees. So that kind of makes her special.
Yeah, she, you know, and that was just kind of a reminder, at least in the movie, of how much of a badass she was. And
she had the Elvish Ring of Power as well.
Well, right.
Yeah.
I mean, you already said that she created heaven on earth for the elves. I mean, I thought we'd covered that already.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's not in the books that much, really. But when they are in Lothlorien, they do kind of give you the sense that she's very powerful.
Oh, yes.
And even she does, I think, mention that Sauron has been trying to, you know, probe her realm and, you know, find out what her secrets and everything, but she's been blocking them out. So she, you know, would have been until he got the ring, of course. Then it would have been all over for her, too.
Yeah. Would have been curtains for everybody. Curtains, I tell you.
Curtains, I say. Gotta bring that back. I don't know. So, yeah, Galadriel, also in this movie, she totally banishes Sauron to Mordor, which I thought was pretty cool. I liked how they had the eye with the iris to be like the you know, humanoid form of Sauron.
Oh.
The Dark Lord version. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it was a good look to match with what they did later, I guess you would say. Yeah. Yeah, it was just kind of cool looking in general. Just,
well, I remember being a little bit like, why is it always the eye? Because I feel like Sauron was always, you know, he had a physical form too. Like, it was... Maybe, but then it was never exactly said what his state was in the novel, really.
It was very, you could probably argue it both ways. Because they do call him the Eye a lot in the book.
And that is his symbol. Like, that's what all the orcs, you know, wear on their shields or whatever, is the Eye.
Right.
Of Sauron. Sauron.
So, I mean, you can see that part. Like, you can definitely understand that, where they get the motif. But, yeah, in the book, they do kind of say that he might have a physical form. Like, that even though he doesn't have the ring, like, the ring would kind of, like, seal the deal. It's almost like, I always think of it, too, in Harry Potter terms, kind of a Voldemort thing. Where the guy kind of needed a little bit extra to really come back from the grave and not just be a spirit.
Yeah, he at least had a location that he existed in, because he had that palantir that he was using to look out and see where, you know, what was happening in the land. And, like, people could kind of feel his sight on them.
right.
Especially, you know, the ring bearer. But, I felt like he existed in one place. And so in the movie, it was always the eye. Like, that's the only thing you ever saw. So I liked the kind of updated version here for The Hobbit.
Right.
So look, maybe a small point.
And, you know, I guess the one thing that was interesting to me is that, it was the shortest of all the movies that they did.
And B, it was still 2 hours and 45 minutes?
I think it was 2:25.
Oh, 2:25?
Yeah, that's what I thought I saw on AMC's website. I will go.
That probably makes sense. But I guess if you add in the previews, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of the problem.
Yeah. <'cause
laughs> that you guys got there late, and you still saw plenty of previews.
Yeah. That's true. Like, when you go to the movies, if you're sitting there through all the previews, it can be,
yeah, it's 15 to 20 minutes now. Like, Jeremy and I, when we were doing the movie reviews, we had to tell ourselves to stop talking about the previews because there were just too many of them, and it ended up chewing up like 20 minutes of our show.
Yeah.
It was just a terrible idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other stupid shit we could talk about.
144 minutes.
144. So that's 2 hours and 24 minutes. Yeah, there you go.
So, and the one thing about it is, it really moved to me because, unlike previous movies, there was no adventuring to be had really in this movie. This was pretty...
There was no dishes being washed, that I could tell.
No dishes being washed.
No dishes at all, I don't think. People really were, like, forced out of their homes and, like, living on the road. And it was not... there was not a lot of dishes to be seen.
No, there was not a lot of merriment. There were not a lot of songs.
No. So I feel like maybe I missed out on some of that stuff. It, you know, in a way, it reminds me of another hobby. I don't know.
Spit it out, Phillips.
Dragon Ball Z. Which has a good story in there, but it's unfortunately surrounded by so much fluff that it's really kind of a lot to get through, you know. It can still be fun to watch, but it seems like maybe The Hobbit with Peter Jackson has a little bit of that problem, in that there's a little too much fluff overall.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of goes back. They really should have kept it to movies.
Yeah.
They added too much stuff. And the only thing that kept this movie moving for me was just that it was almost all action. Like,
right.
There was Smaug destroying Lake Town.
Which was kind of like, you know, how they have at the beginning of every James Bond movie, there's like a action sequence that's really kind of disconnected from the rest of the plot, the main plot and everything. It's just like James Bond being a badass, basically.
Right. Yeah, I gotcha.
This, to me, this felt kind of like that, where it was like, yeah, I mean, it's not like it didn't happen for the rest of the movie, but it kind of like basically puts a capper on the previous movie, it seems like.
Yeah.
And then,
it's
a big action sequence that kind of starts things off. And
the first 15 minutes of the movie was the conclusion of the last movie. It's essentially what it was, yes.
So that, I mean, felt pretty cool. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, if you're going to see one Hobbit movie, like, you probably should just see this one. It, I feel pretty good about it. Having seen this one without having seen the other ones, I guess.
Oh, you haven't seen the other ones at all?
No.
Oh, okay. I didn't have, like, I had problems with the usual filler shit that they put in there.
For this one?
No, for the other two.
Oh, yeah.
Because this one, they just drew out something that in the book is... Because doesn't something... Don't they have to defend that place still? After the dwarves gain it? I actually haven't read The Hobbit in quite a while.
No, I haven't either.
So...
I just... a problem I had was trying to figure out what the five armies were. Because there was an army of men from Lake Town. There was
correct.
An army of elves... from the woods.
Yep.
There was
army of dwarves.
An army of dwarves. What was that guy's name? Thrain? No. Thurin.
Oh.
The dwarf. His cousin came, right?
Yeah.
And then there was the orcs. So that's four armies.
Yeah, they...
Were they saying there was another army of orcs?
Yes, it was two different sets of orcs.
Okay.
In my opinion.
That's what I was kind of thinking.
Because it was from a different I feel like it was from a different camp of orcs. Like it was two kind of you know, one was from the north and one was from the south situation.
Yeah. Maybe a case where Sauron is gathering his forces together or something.
Correct.
Something.
Yeah. Everything's starting to... Oh, for Pete's sakes.
He's ready to get his breeding pits up to...
up to snuff.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find the other guy's name here. Oh, Dane 2.
Dane.
King Dane.
Ironfoot. That was the other leader that came up, the other dwarf.
Yeah, the other dwarf army, yes. And I guess if you wanted to, you could argue that it was two different dwarf armies.
Oh, well, no.
But
I don't
think that's the case.
I don't think you can say that 13 dwarves are an army.
Well, yeah. That was one of the more ridiculous parts of the movie, in my opinion. I liked how 13 dwarves somehow is going to swing the battle in some momentous way.
Right, especially when you're sending them out there in the front to, like, get mowed down by this army of orcs that's out there. And, like, they weren't wearing as much armor as the other guys. And, like, you guys were wearing more armor. Like, what happened? They took off their armor when they came out. Were they all wearing mithril? I don't think so.
Yeah, they did not seem like the mithril was hanging out everywhere.
Mm-mm.
So,
I know there's a lot of riches in there, but I think mithril is supposed to be pretty rare.
Yeah, that was one of the other suspect parts of at least their attire, let's say. Because, yeah, he... when Thorin is going nuts, like, he is in, like, a complete suit of armor the whole time.
Right.
But for some reason, he dresses in a leather jacket and, like, an open shirt for battle.
That's true. Yeah, he was, like, all done up in his special armor.
Yeah, he even had, like, the big, like, dwarf helmet on, the king helmet on.
Maybe that was all ceremonial. I don't know. But
it stands to reason that you could find some armor in there that would probably fit your person, fit your dwarfness.
I would say there's probably quite a bit of stuff in there. I mean, Smaug probably didn't burn up everything, I would think.
Well, and there's only so much he could burn up. In some ways. I mean, wouldn't you kind of get tired of it? Breathing on dwarf?
I don't know.
Dwarf armor for 8 days on end?
I don't know. Have you ever breathed on dwarf armor? I mean, don't knock it till you tried it.
Well, I don't... Maybe it could be fun.
Yeah.
I'll get some dwarf armor for New Year's Eve.
Just go take some time and breathe on it.
buy just some alcohol and some matches and just breathe fire on it.
Oh, you could breathe fire? Yeah, I guess you could do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a dragon, it would be more of just like breathing. So I guess the other thing to consider is we're not really thinking about what the dragon... What's the dragon's motivation here? Like, what are they exactly... Like, what do they think is fun, you know? I mean... Do they think that burning things all the time is fun?
I would say no.
Seems like sitting on gold is fun for a dragon.
Yes. Sitting on gold seems like a large amount of entertainment. And it seems like the only time he gets up is to destroy. But the only time he wants to destroy was either when he's aggravated or he wants more gold.
Someone... either took his gold or he's going to get more gold somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a very limited set of circumstances that that gain his motivation.
Now, he probably needs to eat, I would imagine, right? I think he eats their ponies at one point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but I don't feel like before that time... that he's eaten very much. Like, I feel like he's almost in a state of hibernation. Like, that's how much ecstasy laying on gold is. And, like, it turns him into a bear, and he's just kind of hibernating there. Like, he doesn't need food. He just goes out, he gets fat when he gets the gold, comes back, and knocks off for a couple of 9 months.
Yeah, that's
it's
weird.
A pretty nice deal, I guess, if you want to be a dragon, if you like sleeping.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do like sleeping, but I just wonder, like, what is it about the gold that he likes so much? Like, could it be, like, copper or...
Well, I mean, he was okay with it being mithril, which would be, I would think, a little bit smoother in texture than any gold coin.
Yeah, I bet it's just a mental thing. Like, he is thinking about, you know, how much it's worth and, like, how much the humans are, like, jealous of him. And he's just like, oh, yeah, fuck all you. This is mine. That's kind of like, it gets them off a little, you know? I think that's kind of...
Well, I think that goes without saying.
So, I didn't feel too bad when at the beginning of this movie, he got shot with the black arrow, was that what the... And through his weak spot, and he gets killed.
Yeah, that was another one that they tried to make a tearjerker. I guess I'm...
It almost felt like there was a mini movie at the beginning of the movie, which involved, like, a father and son, and, you know, them coming to
the family coming together.
Other. Yeah. There's a lot going on in the first... The opening... I don't know. The cold open? The part that was, like, really before the credits?
Well, they didn't have... they did have a little bit of that, but... they had a little more of the father son bonding, I felt like, happened after Smaug had died.
Right. Well, that's true. There's some of that happened before, like with him standing still while his father was
shooting the
dragon who was rampaging directly behind him. Yeah. Don't look at the dragon. Why doesn't he just say he can look or turn around the other way? Maybe he didn't want him freaking out.
I assumed that he just didn't want him looking at a dragon who was really close enough, really, for the kid to know how close he was anyway. Because Smaug was talking to them at a very, like, maybe two doors down kind of a location.
Well, it seemed like he was so far away because he had to, you know, get all geared up to cover this ground that he couldn't just, you know, reach out and smash the tower down.
Well... So,
but he was, like, able to tell not only that there was a man and a boy, but that they were father and son from, like, half a town away, it seemed like.
They did make quite a deal out of his smelling abilities in the book, because he knew the number of dwarves that were in the cave, like, even though they were, like, way up in a little shaft.
Okay.
Because I remember him recounting to Bilbo how many dwarves were with him.
That makes sense. Yeah, I
don't know if you can smell familial relations, but
I'll give him that. Yeah,
Smaug was pretty smart.
Yeah,
so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe he's smart enough to realize that if a guy is trapped in a burning tower with a small child, that it happens to be his own child. You know, I think Smaug is kind of sharp. You know, his eyes were pretty good, at least. He would be able to spot that it was a larger person and a smaller person.
It was all smoky. I mean, I don't know if... maybe dragons have heat vision or something. It's possible.
Well, he did have a nice vantage point over the fire.
But I feel like... Well, that part, he was, like, landed, right? He was in the city, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. That part was... And I love their art department and just their special effects too. They had Smaug crushing the houses and whatnot, and they just had like tiles popping, and they were they were just completely crushing at some point. You just saw the burning embers inside and everything. It was so badass as he kind of crawled his way towards
I did like how they had Smaug's anatomy kind of figured out, because he didn't have like regular front paws or arms. They were, you know, built in with the wings the way I guess kind of like a bat, you know.
Oh,
because for them, it's like their arms basically turned into wings, right? Over time. Right. And that's kind of how they get around, too. It's like they walk on their, I don't know, either fingers or knuckles, basically, that have become separated and gotten, you know, turned into wings. So that's kind of like how Smaug is getting around by like kind of boom, 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 smashing his wings around and moving.
Right. Yeah.
Because some other fantasy dragons seems like they have claws. I don't know. I thought that was cool.
Oh, I don't care which way you go with the dragons. Like, I like the Asian long dragon. I like the Smaug bat type dragon, and even Smaug.
Oh, okay.
And even the just the one, the dragon. I would call it the traditional English dragon, where it does
have the Western dragon, perhaps
the Western dragon.
Yeah,
where it has four legs and wings.
Right.
You know, I don't really have a preference. It just depends upon how it's portrayed in the movie.
I think I do like the, I know I like it because I do. because I'm me.
oh, yeah, because the rendering does not really show that. The J.R.R. Tolkien one is the more traditional.
Right, because look, there's a front claw there, right?
Yeah, there's a front front leg.
So, yeah, they did change that up a bit, considering that is Tolkien's own illustration there, right?
Yeah. That guy had a lot of free time.
Yeah, making up languages, drawing his own pictures. Come on, man. No, that is pretty cool, though. I guess I forgot that he did some of those illustrations himself.
Yeah, not all of them, but he did do some of them himself, so... He was at least half decent at mapping out a drawing.
But, you know, I sorry to disagree, Mr. Tolkien, wherever you are. But I do like the as you say, the Batwing dragon. Anyway, I thought that that beginning was a very cool opening. And especially in IMAX 3D, which is how we saw it. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, it was a good way to start things off, and then you get to you do get a little break before everything goes completely bananas with all the armies.
Yeah, there was, and there's a lot of armies.
Well, there was at least four.
Yeah, right.
And a questionable fifth orc army.
Right. An even more questionable fifth dwarf army, but. Yeah, let's moving on. There's the credits. Battle of the Five Armies. Boom.
Yep.
Then we
Lake
go
Town
to
Dale Town to Thorin losing his mind.
Oh wait, we are introduced to a really likable character. The
oh, you're gonna go deep into this one, huh?
Well, I just wanted to get this guy
in.
Just
want to drag this review out.
I got to get this guy in there because, like, I mean, I guess this is in some ways meant for children, this series.
Yeah, I mean...
At least it's not intended for children.
The writing style for The Hobbit is much different than the writing style for The Lord of the Rings. Even though Tolkien wrote both of them. Yeah, even if you wouldn't necessarily call it a kid's book, it is definitely more light hearted than The Lord of the Rings is.
True. Yeah, so it's a one thing you can say for this one is you really know who the bad guys are. Like, they don't really do much to conceal. Like, there's not a lot of gray area. Because this one character, who's really like the sniveling second in command, I guess, of Lake Town.
Yes.
At the beginning of the movie, anyway.
Correct. Yeah, he's trying to make away with the gold and somehow survives the statue falling on them.
Now, here's something where you could say, yeah, well, because he got pushed off earlier, remember?
Oh, I did forget about that.
Yeah. Something you could say maybe is filler, right? This character and his. Shenanigans that he gets up to throughout the movie.
Yes, because you would not be wrong in arguing that the 225, despite it being the shortest runtime, still could have been shorter.
It could have been,
but they felt like they needed some levity in there. Is what I'm assuming was the train of thought there.
Yeah, and actually, I would argue that maybe that I agree with that because. Like, as goofy as this guy was, Like, I just kind of knew that this guy was just going to be goofy every time he showed up. So I was just waiting for him to do something. And he kind of topped himself as time went on. So, you know, he found new ways to be cowardly and craven, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, and he really hammed it up quite a bit.
That was the thing, too. Like, the guy was, like, so obviously a bad guy. It was like... Yeah. I was like, wow, you know, this is such a likable character here, you know, because it wasn't as if he even did anything neutral at any point. Like, every action that he did was, like, awful in some way.
Yeah. Normally there's some sort of, will he get redemption right. in this kind of situation where you think, oh, they've turned the corner.
There was never a hint.
And then they kind of like backstab or something, even if it's, you know, kind of a shorter lived one. But yeah, this one, nope, not even a second of that backtracking. Well, okay, maybe only a second when he's talking to Bard and Bard goes, do this. And he's like, okay. And then he always conveniently split off from Bard so that he could then immediately be a douche.
Right. Well, he would say, like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And then kind of...
Yeah, just take off.
Go out of sight and, yeah. Dress up like a woman.
Which was the topper in all of his shenanigans.
Oh, I don't know. I guess, like, that kind of thing, it did for me... Like, it felt like the movie was taking its time, but it was well paced. Like, they had action, you know, action, and then a break. I don't know. I felt like they did a good job of kind of, like, keeping things moving along, but I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
I mean, they did just enough of that to set up the whole story and...
Some comic relief in there.
Throw in some comic relief because, I mean, it really was interwoven with Thorin going dragon gold mad.
Yeah, and I really liked that part of the story. I felt like that was well done.
I mean, that was another thing that it really stayed true to the book.
Not really subtle, when he was having his dragon sickness onset there.
No, it came quickly. That hit like a Mack truck.
Yeah, he really went down hard to the dragon sickness. He just did not get better. But, well, yeah, and his voice turned into a dragon voice. I didn't know that was part of the symptoms. But
he sounded a bit like Smaug when he started talking there. And it started with just little inflections, and they ramped it up where he almost completely sounded like him. So yeah. It was pretty cool to see his madness in full bloom.
Yeah, and I thought the actor did a pretty good job. I kind of believed his journey there a little, you know, that he was succumbing to this, whatever. I guess it's because the dragon was there for so long and he's so greedy. You know, he's been telling so many people to fuck off. He's got all this gold that it's like... somehow it creates this psychic taint or something on the gold that anybody else who comes in there is now going to turn into an asshole as well.
Well, there was also the part that they did do at least fairly decent job of filling in that his grandfather had suffered from a similar problem, though, even before the dragon was in there.
Okay. That is kind of like a dwarfish thing.
Dwarves can get a little gold mad. The only thing that is somehow more gold mad than a dwarf is a dragon.
Yeah.
He is that is like the top 1% of gold hoarders. And then like the next 90% are dwarves.
Yeah. They're filling out the next 10 percentile there. But the dragons are up at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
those dragons, those damn one percenters.
They are, though. That's totally what's going on. It's a social allegory. Tolkien was way ahead of his time. So, I liked the gold sickness thing. He did actually say, I think, when he kind of broke his fever, that he wasn't going to be like his grandfather, who had the same problem, I guess.
Right. And so the comedy stuff that we were just talking about was interspersed with that. And it certainly helped to not just kind of mine one thing all the time. So they had a good kind of A, B, C thing going on.
And they had the dwarf and elf love story, which, I don't know. For some reason, it worked for me. I mean, I know it's not in the books or anything, but I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I could have, again, like, I'm just fine with them cutting this movie down and making this thing 2 hours. Just throw that garbage out the window, and I would be perfectly fine.
Well, this gives poor Feely something to do. I mean, what else is he going to do?
Well,
besides get killed. I guess I should have said spoiler first. Oh, well.
Oh, man. Well, he was kind of important-ish in the book, from what I remember. Or at least a little more featured than some of the other dwarves. So, yeah, I mean, this was a way to feature
him. He's
probably
the best-looking of the dwarves, I would say. You know?
Would you say he's ruggedly handsome, Ken? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he had sort of a roguish, look to him there, I guess I'd say. Yeah. I mean, compared to the other guys who looked like, you know, monsters, basically.
yes. Bombor, I'm pretty sure, is the one who was super fat. That was always made abundantly clear that he was.
What do you mean, like Bombor? That's a hint there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was described that way in the book, and they certainly kept up to it. And dwarves are pretty sturdy, as they like to use.
Stout. Yeah.
Stout and sturdy are certainly two words that they use with them. So
stumpy, but behind their backs.
Yeah. Yes. Thorin, Feely, Keely.
Don't look at me because I do not know.
I think that was about it. I mean, they were the three
Sleepy,
good look.
Grumpy. Yes. And bashful.
Yes, and Vanity Smurf.
Smurf you.
Well, I think we should get off that smurfing topic. Because I want to smurf you for bringing up that love story.
You know what? I don't know. I thought it was all right. And, you know, it brought Evangeline Lilly into the movie, and also gave her something to do.
Well, and that was another thing that in some ways in the Lord of the Rings movies, I think got underplayed, but just because the elves aren't that involved, aside from Legolas.
Yeah, he's the only elf to actually do anything in the Lord of the Rings.
Right.
There's some that show up, well, okay. I guess, who was that guy who like caused the river to flood and take out the
it was one of
they changed it to Arwen in the movie.
Yeah, it was one of Elrond's main council.
It's one of his main boys. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what his name is. I forgot about that. The guy controlled the fucking water. But anyway, him controlling the water just kind of does speak to it too, though. You occasionally forget how badass they made the elves.
Which I thought was a nice little filler, to continue on with a little bit of filler here, with the scene where Galadriel banishes Sauron, you also see Elrond and Saruman fighting all these Nazgul, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, and yeah, that's why I brought her up earlier about how powerful she was. But just the elves in general, just because they were the oldest race, and some of them didn't come over, most of them didn't come over like Galadriel. So they were born sometime after that, but they're still, even though that they were of a lesser lineage, they still, in the books were presented far and above pretty much everyone else as far as, skill, speed, you know, and just general toughness. Like,
as shown by Legolas, Super Mario style running across that bridge at the, towards the climax of the movie.
yeah, and you know what? That was funny. I thought, when I'm watching that, I'm just like, ah, Jesus Christ. And then you brought up a good point that I had completely forgotten about in the book, and I'm not sure that they did it in the movies.
No.
Was Legolas, they were trapped in a giant snowstorm.
I think it's before they went to Moria. They were trying to get over that mountain.
And he was light enough or fast enough or whatever to walk on top of the snow, unlike everyone else who would sink through it.
Yeah, it was like, you know, 5 feet of snow or something like that.
Right.
They were trying to get through.
And so it was just like, oh, yeah, they were pretty otherworldly. So it became, when you mentioned that, I was just like, ah, shit, yeah, he's right. He could probably pull that off.
I mean, they make it, if you can run on top of snow, you know, you can probably do some of the other crazy shit that they show him doing.
Run on top of falling stone.
Yeah, and whatever he did with that Oliphant. Oh, no. I think the one thing I saw that somebody was making fun of was when he jumped on that horse with Gimli riding at some point in the movie. He just kind of like,
oh,
it's in Lord of the Rings. I don't know if you remember it. But,
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that
he,
was
like,
the...
swung around the horse's neck and then got up on when the horse was running at a full gallop.
What's unbelievable about that?
I buy it. But yeah, elves are a little special in these stories.
And they kind of showed off the badassery. I mean, that was at least one reason why they could take out some of the orc army in general, really, was just the fact that the elves...
Since we're on the topic of elves and the army, what did you think about their habit of, like, turning to the side to let people walk through sometimes in, like, such a robotic, like, fashion?
Impressive. And also, I'm going, can't you give them a little more space? Like,
I know. You have a little personal space there.
You know, take another half a step back, if you could, please. Like, they were just opening up just enough to let through insert whatever here. And like, even when the king is coming through on his giant caribou.
Right.
They're barely letting through the caribou. Like, they're standing, like, right next to it so it can, like... swing its testicles right in their face as it comes by.
But there was like no room for them to move anywhere because they were already so packed in there. That was some tight formation. I don't know. I'm not a, you know, elfish military scholar or anything, but I don't understand why they are doing things the way that they're doing things. I guess wanted to get that out.
Yeah, they were maybe a little robotic.
Right. I mean, they're still living, you know, beings, I would say. They're not robots or anything.
No. They are not stormtroopers.
No.
They are not clones. So, that was the only thing that bothered me with their turning.
All right, so I feel like we've gotten to a couple of the head scratchers that I had for this movie, but another one I wanted to get into was the those giant worm things. Like, they're like, oh, everybody forgot about these giant worm things. Like, the orcs are talking to themselves. And it's like, yeah, I think everybody did. Did anybody ever know about these giant worm things? Because I don't remember that ever coming up before. Was that something they just totally made up?
I feel like it was. Yeah, I don't remember that in any way, shape, or form. I don't know where they came up with that or why they came up with it, because it didn't seem to really in the scheme of the movie, if they were just coming from another area, it would have been completely fine. You would have just, because they didn't really...
I guess they just wanted to throw in some special effects there with these, you know, giant worm creatures. I don't know. That's kind of, I guess, because you're right. They could have just, like, came up over just, a hill or something, you know? Yeah.
Well, and it kind of felt like they just came up over a hill, because all they do is the big worm punches a hole in the ground, and then they come out of the hole instead of coming over the hill. Okay?
And that raises another question. How did they get past that giant worm thing while it was in the tunnel? Like, because it goes back into that tunnel, right?
Right.
There's a lot of questions here.
I mean, maybe it digs another tunnel down and then comes back out, and then the army goes down and it comes through just to punch through. And then as soon as it pulls its head back that couple of 5 feet, the orc army can pop up and take off, and they're okay. Safe.
I think we're going to have to diagram this and... see if we can't post it online, just so our listeners can understand what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I think we can do a dissertation on this.
We need to get into it.
The physics.
The logistics of how this is happening. So yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah, weird, unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Again, like they just do stuff that I don't understand, and I can understand why the Tolkiens might not understand. You know, it's just like you added this for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I guess the other part that I thought was a little bit weird was the bunny, the sled that was pulled by the rabbits. Is that what was going on there?
Yeah, Radagast
had the rabbits pull the sleigh. That seemed a little strange.
Yeah,
I don't think that's from the book exactly.
No, he is not really featured in any meaningful fashion in either in any of the books, honestly. Even the Silmarillion doesn't really have him in there that much.
No, I feel like he gets a mention somewhere in The Lord of the Rings, again, when Gandalf is saying what he's been up to. But they really gave him a little more to do here, I guess.
Yeah, and they even gave Tom Bombadil... hold on, no, that's not who that is. I'm sorry.
The werebear guy?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the werebear guy. Because that was kind of funny at the end of the movie.
That was pretty cool.
which was discussed right before we started here.
Which I wondered what my wife was there with us watching it. And, like, she hasn't read any of these books or anything. And, like, they didn't even really talk about this character before, like, the very end of the movie, this werebear guy.
Right.
And so, at the end, the eagles come in to kind of turn the tide. So, I guess, are they another army? Or maybe they were the Fifth Army.
The eagles could have been counted as the Fifth Army, but then, as I argued, they needed to help out against the killer bats that came.
Ooh, so they might even be the Sixth Army at this point.
Yeah, they might be Sixth. Like, they might have undercounted armies. We're still a little unclear on what armies they counted.
So, obviously, there's still a lot of controversy about this, and I don't think it should be considered to be a settled matter. We still need to get to the bottom of how many armies were actually at this battle. But, yeah, so the eagles come in to kind of turn the tide, and off the back of one of them jumps...
yeah,
this guy
Bjorn,
who in midair begins to transform into a bear and then lands on the ground and starts like
just mauling orcs.
I was like, I wonder what my wife thinks is going on right now. Because there's like no explanation given. It's just some guy comes out and just flying on a bird and then just...
Turns into a bear. Yeah, that is pretty over the top if you don't know what's going on.
Seems like, when was this established? Yeah, no one else is turning into animals throughout the movie, so it's just a little strange.
Well, no one else turned into animals. Like, he's the lone real shapeshifter.
That's true, yeah.
That I can think of in the books.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to get in is, in the books, the trolls couldn't come out in the daylight in The Hobbit, right?
Correct.
But there were trolls, like, coming out in this battle and, like, knocking through the walls and everything. And
Yes. Yeah, okay. There were several, because even during the fighting, and I did kind of like that they kind of switched up the fighting where they went from big battle scenes to, like, one-on-one confrontations to even switch that part of the filming process up, even though it's fighting. Like, they kind of went, you know, big picture, little picture, a couple of different times.
Right. It did, again, with the pacing, I guess, even the battle scenes, they kind of... And I felt like the action was clear, like, what was happening, who was hitting who was winning, who was losing, like... It wasn't, like, completely disjarring in the way that some, you know, Transformers movies, shall we say, can end up being.
Right. What was the topic right before that I completely off-tracked us from?
Oh, werebears? let's see.
And Jackie being weirded out by the whole thing. But, oh,
but she actually did like the movie, from, like, not having been a fan of in general. I mean, not like she's against it, but she's just not, you know, hasn't read all the books or anything, or any of the books.
But, right.
She ended up liking the movie, so.
Yeah, the lady has liked all of them. She thinks they're a little long.
Which is, I think, a valid point.
Yeah.
As we've discussed, yes.
Yeah, we've gone at length with that one, even for this movie.
Yeah, we're in danger of getting into Peter Jackson territory here with our complaints about how long his movies are. that's a little meta for us, I think.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we did have two other topics, but with all of the nerding out and various sideways...
Oh, we're over an hour already.
Sideways parts of this show.
We just about came up to the end of the movie, I feel like, at this point.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess we should cover, like,
so Thorin kind of snaps out of his dragon sickness, if we would call it that.
Yeah, and they join the fight, which we've mentioned, and then he ends up having a one-on-one confrontation with the head orc, who has a sword attached to one arm, of course.
Yeah, it was like a Evil Dead sort of reference there, almost. Instead of the chainsaw, he has a sword.
Yeah.
But
And he pops up out of the frozen ice like any good supervillain would.
That was so bad. Like, I really had a problem with that. And I mentioned it to you after the movie when we were having lunch, but
well, it's worth repeating.
It's pretty bad, because I mean, it was kind of cool, like, the way that he, well, okay, the bad orc, the kind of general of the orcs, or at least one of the armies, you know, we're not, again, we don't want to wade into that controversy right now, but
yes, the 6, 7, 9 armies, whatever,
sure, one of the army parentheses and parentheses commanders is the he has this, like, chain with a big weight at the end of it, basically, that he swings around as his weapon.
Yeah, a mace, you might say.
Sure,
a modified mace.
Yeah, I don't know.
Morningstar.
I don't know. It's like a really long chain, though. But
right,
and he's using it to smash the ice of the river that they're standing on, which really is not a great idea, I would argue.
Because
that could backfire.
Yeah, and it did.
Yes. But it was kind of neat the way he like created a little ice island. Thorin like threw him the weighted chain, which was, and then stepped off the
other end
of the ice island, which caused it to tip over and sink. So that, I mean, that was cool. But then for some reason the orc floats under the ice with his eyes open at first.
Well, he sinks, and but you see him go down, yeah. And then he comes up and is floating just underneath the ice.
Without moving, he's floating, and he's, like, following Thorin, you know, without having to swim. And until he stabs him through the foot, which was kind of cool, and then, like, jumps through the ice, out of the ice, lands on his feet. Like, how is that even remotely possible? Like,
and the mace was, or whatever you want to call it, was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I mean,
was it just in his hand? I mean, could he have dropped it, I suppose?
He could have dropped it, yes.
Well, then, he should have dropped it earlier.
He should have. I mean, I can only assume this is because he really wanted to screw with him. Like,
he really wanted to fuck with Thorin. Yeah. he is that evil.
Victory was not, you know, could not be complete unless he really messed with his mind.
he really wanted him to think he won first.
Yeah, it made zero sense. Like, why would you, if you could jump out of the water like that, why wouldn't you just do that immediately?
I would have. And I mean, he shouldn't have used that weapon, really. Not just for the fact that it could work against you, just for the fact that it was a slow-moving weapon against a shorter,
How fast are dwarves, though? They're not that fast, are they?
They aren't particularly fast.
So, I don't know. Maybe against a dwarf it actually wasn't that terrible, but...
No, but it's still, go with a faster weapon against a slower opponent.
Sure. I mean, why not? I mean, you're already, you know, so much bigger.
Yeah, you're already bigger. Like, there's no reason to try and smash the dwarf. Like, you're not going to make the dwarf shorter. Like, who cares?
I know. I think we could really help this orc out if we were, you know, there to kind of give him a little advice.
War advisors. Yeah. You gotta listen to Sun Tzu. Do not use that bad weapon.
That's really a bad idea, man. You already have an arm that's a sword. Like, I think, you know...
I think that's enough.
You might be overkill here, yeah. So that was pretty much the big climactic battle there, I guess.
Yeah.
Thorin ends up getting killed. Well, he... also takes out the orc at the same time, I would say.
I think realizes that he is going to die anyway, so he dies in order to take out the orc at the same time.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah, it was, you know, a nice hero's comeback for him.
Right.
You know, after going dragon gold mad.
A real dick there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other death scene, which I'm sure you loved, was Keeley.
Yes, I enjoyed it because
being killed while what's her name looked on.
Yeah,
in horror for whatever reason, even though elves are badass, she's sitting there crying like a woman.
Oh. She has emotions. Damn it. She's a human being.
No, not an elf.
I liked it because... Oh, yeah, she is an elf. Sorry. because it wouldn't have worked out, right? I mean, they really should... If they had ended up getting together, I probably would not have liked the movie. Like, for that reason. But it was kind of like a doomed relationship that it wasn't going to happen. But then, this way, it kind of like gave it a certain poignancy, I would say. If that makes sense.
Right. It closed the story. I will give it that.
It ended that storyline.
The story in and of itself, the way they presented it, made sense. I didn't like it. I thought it was a waste of time, but it did at least have some inherent logic in it.
Okay, there we go. Look, I think I really turned you around on that one.
Yep, big ups to that part.
Huge fan.
Huge fan.
We should maybe start a section of the blog where you do some fan fiction with those two characters.
I'll just throw Faramir in there just to fuck with him.
It'll be like young Faramir.
It's going to be a three-way.
It'll be like the early years.
Yeah, but, Faramir, the bull roarer.
Yeah, I guess we didn't need to get into any other subtopics here today. That was
no. We have drugged this movie out, this review out.
Well, I don't know if anyone's still listening, but me and Kevin had a fun time here going over this movie.
Well, and there is one more thing to mention here. You gratefully supplied Buckeye Lake Legend Valley IPA. Nice taste up front, little bitterness in the back. It's a very good beer, and it's just from it's about 30 miles outside of town here.
Yeah, local beverage.
Yep. So good tasty local choice again.
If you happen to find some wherever you are, I'd say give it a shot, because it's probably one of my top IPAs at this point. I'd say pretty good.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I don't know, at DeFrango11, at Gozer33, at Stunt Granny for the plugs. I mean, you are listening to this on stuntgranny.com, so I would imagine you know the information at this point, hopefully.
Well, if not, you just heard it. So rewind if you didn't hear it the first time.